This is the Does God Exist Bi-Monthly Journal for the Visually Impaired for July-August 2015. John Clayton is your reader. Our cover for this particular issue has a picture of all kinds of creatures, a bear and a rhinoceros and a hyena and an elephant and geese and parrots and toads and a baby. And our basic theme is evidence for God's existence through the things he has made. For those things of God which the eye is unable to see, ever since the world was made, have been clearly perceptible and understandable through the things he has made, even his eternal power and divine character, so that men have no excuse. That's a quote of Romans, the first chapter, and verse 20. Throughout the entire Bible, God has encouraged us to study the creation and learn from it. The writers of Psalms overflowed with repeated admonitions on all kinds of subjects. Psalm 19:1 encourages us to look into space and at the world around us. Psalms 139, verse 14 tells us to look at our bodies and marvel at their design. Proverbs 6:6 encourages us to look at the ant as an example of God's design of living things. Proverbs 8 enlists wisdom to urge us to look at the logistics of creation, in some cases seemingly bringing out concepts of quantum mechanics and the role of wisdom in all aspects of the creation. In Matthew 6, verses 26 through 33, Jesus refers his listeners to the beauty of the world around them in flowers and the provision of God to birds. In the 21st century, we have so much evidence of God's planning and design in the world around us that the words of the Bible writers ring truer than ever. We can look deeper into space and gather light from the very beginning of the creation. We can smash atoms to bits, and by looking at the bits, know how the atom was designed. We can look at the very building blocks of life and see many things that tell us about forces and techniques that allow life to exist and to survive in a world that is hostile to the fragile elements that comprise life. Intuitive design. The simplest way and easiest way to see the evidence of God's design is just to look at what we observe and ask, how is it possible for such a thing to come into existence? In this journal, we have had a column that we call Dandy Designs, which shows this type of evidence. That column has been in every issue since 1972, with two examples in each issue. That means we have described more than 1,000 examples of things to look at and think about that have taken mankind centuries to understand. Thus, they obviously require planning, wisdom, and design to come into existence. The question is whether such evidence demands that God did each of these things, or whether there are natural processes that culminate in what we observe. Naturalism is the faith offered by skeptics as an alternative to believing that God did all of these things. Two things need to be pointed out about naturalism. The first is that natural explanations for what appear to be designed and planned properties of organisms are not just blind statements of faith. Using principles of Darwinian evolutionary change, a reasonable scenario can be developed in many cases for whatever it is we observe. Migrations, for example, can be explained by simple and obvious point that animals that migrate out of a lethal environment will survive, and animals that don't migrate won't. The second point is that being able to propose a possible scenario for how something came about doesn't mean that the proposed scenario actually happened that way. Atheists tend to present the notion that if they can build any kind of model that might explain something observable in nature, that the model is a proven fact. In many cases, the model has so many statements of possible events that it requires massive faith to accept them all. In one of my biology books explaining hibernation, the word if in the explanation was used 32 times. Intuitive design is a valid argument for the existence of God for two primary reasons. The first is that the number of examples is so massive, and the number of conditional statements and chance models for each of them is so numerous, the naturalistic explanations have limited credibility. The second argument is that there are some situations, such as the presence of Fibonacci sequences in the natural world, where no naturalistic explanation seems possible. A skeptic will respond that as time goes by, naturalistic data will become available. To eliminate this latter point, we can't discuss what we don't know. We can only make judgments on the basis of the evidence available. So appealing to what we may learn in the future is a departure from a logical consideration of what we know. When new data becomes available, it is up to honest people who want to know the truth to consider it. Statistical design. A second kind of design evidence that points to God's wisdom and planning in the creation around us is the evidence from mathematics. We have to consider what is reasonable and what is not. In 1961, Dr. Frank Drake introduced the Drake equation. This equation attempted to predict how many active, communicative, extraterrestrial civilizations should exist within our Milky Way galaxy. Seven variables were considered: the rate of star formation, the fraction of stars that have planets, the number and fraction of planets that could support life, the fraction of planets that actually do develop life, the fraction of civilizations that develop technology, and the length of time for which such civilizations release detectable signals. When you look at Drake's project, two things should become evident to you. The first is that any attempt to get an accurate number for many of these variables is impossible. Secondly, there are massive numbers of variables that are not included in the calculation. As our knowledge of the cosmos has increased, the number of variables necessary for life to come into existence increases. In recent years, quantum mechanics, dark matter, the knowledge of the nature of space and of our solar system have added numerous variables previously not known. These variables have to be right for the formation and sustaining of life. An example of this is our growing understanding of how important dark matter is to the formation of life. In a recent article in National Geographic, this was in January 2015, page 109, they said it this way, quote, "Stars might never have formed without the gravitational force generated by abundant dark matter," end of quote. We now know that we can only see 5% of the observable universe. The remaining consists of 27% dark matter and 68% dark energy. Statistical design depends on a simple principle of statistics. When there are multiple variables involved in achieving a particular end, the way you calculate the total odds is to multiply the independent probabilities. As a simple example, if you flip a penny, what are the odds that you will get a heads? The answer, of course, is 1 out of 2. If you flip 2 pennies, what are the odds that both pennies will be heads? The answer is 1 out of 2 times 1 out of 2, or 1 out of 4. If you had 5 pennies and tossed them up in the air, what are the odds that all 5 would be heads? The answer is 1 out of 2 times 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 1 out of 2, which is 1 out of 32. If you took the 47 variables mentioned earlier and had a probability of 1 out of 2 for each of them, you would have to multiply 1 out of 2 47 times. When we calculate the variables related to the formation of matter, the creation of life, and the design of systems critical to the existence of life, we find the odds of these things happening by chance are astronomically small. In this journal, over the years, we have reported on numerous studies by believers and non-believers alike that show how unlikely this is. The odds are so astronomically small that the probability is statistically beyond any reasonable acceptance. Odds such as 1 chance in 10 to the 160th power, that's 160 zeros, for chance events to result in the production of life have been quoted in many papers. Some have given odds of 1 in 10 to the 800th for other events. Our point in this discussion of probability is to simply say that numbers of this magnitude are so impossible to comprehend that any attempt to justify things on the basis of chance borders on irrationality. Gordon Mills, in the Journal of the American Scientific Affiliation, September 1990, page 159, shows that 10 to the 42nd molecules would fill all the oceans of the Earth. Similar magnitudes have been given for the number of particles in the cosmos. Any attempt to say that there is enough space-time for chance to create life is in strong opposition to the facts. There just isn't enough time or space for it to happen. Even proposing multiple universes is of no help because the events leading to creation have to occur at the same time and in the same place. It does no good for an event to be in a different universe at a different time, since all the events have to work together in a given sequence to reach a desired result. All the atheist can do is to give a blind faith statement in the chance formation of the universe and life. Biblical design. The final kind of design that can be seen as a support for the existence of God is what is revealed to us through the Bible and backed up by our own personal observation. Ronnie Dunn, of Brooks and Dunn country music fame, expressed it in a line in one of his hit songs. He said, quote, "I just can't believe it all ends in a slow ride in the back of a long black hearse," end of quote. There is strong evidence from our own experience that our physical lives are not all we experience. Creation of man and woman in the image of God sets us apart. Only humans worship, create art and music, feel guilt and sympathy, and exhibit a variety of other spiritual characteristics. In addition to our unique spiritual nature, the institutions that God has given us and how we benefit from them speak of a design beyond what can be attributed to the human mind. Marriage and the oneness that man and woman can have is a beautiful thing that goes beyond mere biology. The ecstasy of love and of worship and the effect that God has in the lives of men and women speak of the design that is not a product of human intelligence. Tragically, many people have been brought up to only trust in human devices and creations and do not have the capacity to experience this beauty. Survival of the fittest and looking out only for one's own well-being brings us down to the level of the simplest forms of life. Paul wrote in Romans 8:5-7, quote, "Those who live according to the sinful nature have their mind set on what that nature desires. But those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their mind set on what the Spirit desires. The mind of sinful man is death, but the mind controlled by the Spirit is life and peace. The sinful mind is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so," end of quote. Those of us who have lived in rejection of God have seen the consequences of that lifestyle and can testify to what an incredible change happened when we allowed God's design for our lives to rule what we do. We are unable to convey this to skeptics for the reasons Paul states. 1 John 1, 5-7 describes the difference as walking in darkness as opposed to walking in the light. The contrast is a great evidence of God's design for mankind. Rejecting it brings darkness in every aspect of our lives and throttles the love that God intended for us to have. God's solution for human ecological abuse. Unless you have been isolated from television, newspapers, and movies for the past 25 years, you are certainly aware of the enormous amount of publicity that has been given to environmental concerns. We are constantly being told that the resources we depend on are in danger of running out, being contaminated, or being useless in the face of an environmental planetary catastrophe. We have all heard about global warming, and we are all aware of the limited supply of fossil fuels. None of us is immune from concerns about the effects humans have on climate, pollution, and the shortage of water. When I am stuck in a traffic jam in one of our large cities, it amazes me that there has been enough gasoline available to run all of those vehicles in all of these cities for so long. One of God's first instructions to man and woman is revealed in Genesis 2:15, and it was given before man sinned. The Bible says, quote, "The Lord God took man and put him into the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it," end of quote. God gave the man everything he needed to dress and keep. If we look around, we will find that today's problems have solutions that God has left for us to use. One of the most carefully designed tools that God has given us is a species of single-celled algae that inhabits oceans, lakes, and other bodies of water. Like any other phytoplankton, these algae convert carbon dioxide, water, and sunlight into food, and they release oxygen. This particular phytoplankton, called the diatom, is encased in a porous, intricately structured cell, which, because they are made of silica, are extremely sharp and resistant. The mass of these shells is called diatomaceous earth, and the use of this material has been known for a very long time. It is used to filter liquids, polish surfaces, and serve as a filler in concrete, plastic, and paper. It is used in paint to reduce sheen. It is used in gardening to resist insects that won't cross the sharp shell fragments and to aerate the soil. Because diatoms take in carbon dioxide and sink deep into the ocean, they remove massive amounts of greenhouse gases from the atmosphere, perhaps as much as 50%. Recent studies show that diatoms remove as much greenhouse gas as all the trees, grasses, and other land plants combined. God has given us an excellent tool to use in combating the 21st century plague. The diatom only lives about 6 days, and yet a diatom doubling itself once a day would produce 100 million descendants. Learning how to stimulate the reproduction of diatoms is an area of research that may provide a solution to the greenhouse effect on our environment. Some promising areas are coming to the front, including the fact that iron concentrations can increase the reproduction rate. Before we get too historical about the future and the resources that we have available to face it, let us look around at what God has provided for us. The design of the earth includes providing tools and resources for us to use to, quote, take care of the garden and allow us to concentrate on our spiritual future, not just physical existence. The data for that article came from Smithsonian Magazine, February 2004. Process and Genesis 1 by Al Cornell. The realm in which God dwells is amazingly beyond our comprehension. While we cannot fathom the vastness of the universe, it is a mere creation of His, and time a mere dimension of that universe. Amazingly, we live in this era in which science has determined the relativity of time, even as it relates to the physical realm. Through Isaiah 55:9, He informs us, quote, "As the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts," end of quote. Peter tells us, quote, "With the Lord a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day," end of quote, 2 Peter 3 and verse 8. Let me share some scripture verses which show the activities rightful ascribed to God are accomplished by processes He has set in place. I believe that God has intervened and can't intervene by miracles, but I suspect they will never occur where human science can prove them. Does God bring out the starry host and call them each by name, as written in Isaiah 40 and verse 26? In Job 38, 31 and 32, God says, quote, "Can you bind the beautiful Pleiades? Can you loose the cords of Orion? Can you bring the constellations in their seasons, or lead out the bear with its cubs?" End of quote. Science has unveiled amazing processes at work in the cosmos that explain the movements of galaxies, stars, and planets. When scientists uncovered the heliocentric nature of our solar system, some people proposed that angels were guiding planets in perfect circular orbits around the sun. However, natural processes account for the not-quite-so-perfect orbits of the planets. Does God cause the dawn? The implications of Job 38:12 are that He gives orders to the morning and shows the dawn in its place. Verse 14 continues the thought, quote, "The earth takes shape like clay under a seal," end of quote. The light of dawn allows us to see landscape details compared in this verse to the intricate details left in soft clay by the impress of the signet ring. However, it is scientifically accurate and reasonable to speak of the dawning as a natural event of the earth's motion. Does God send sunshine and rain? Matthew 5:45 says that He causes the sun to rise and sends the rain. Amos 5 and 8 adds a detail of the hydrologic cycle with the words, quote, "He who calls forth the waters of the sea and pours them out over the face of the land," end of quote. Since science has discovered a great deal of information about the processes involved in sunshine and rain events, some think that God has been explained out of these events. Does God cause plants to grow? Paul attributes their growth to God with these words from 1 Corinthians 3:7, quote, "So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow," end of quote. The enormous mass of information that has been assembled about DNA photosynthesis and thousands of processes at work in the growth of living organisms. A person equipped with ability, training, and access to scientific literature can write books about any of these natural processes. They are complex, intricate, and fascinating. But what do they reveal about God's existence and His involvement in their functioning? Of course, science delves into an unending array of questions about how things function. It also addresses many why questions about natural entities and events. However, many why questions find no answer from scientists in their roots. With human inquisitiveness, we rightfully seek answers to questions that science is not equipped to answer. Why does the universe contain the water molecule with its broad array of amazing characteristics? Why is there a thing called light that combines particle and wave characteristics and can be dispersed into a rainbow. Why do we think rainbows are beautiful? In The Hidden Face of God, Gerald Schrader writes, quote, "The mystery that remains in the sunset is the riddle of why and how a mixture of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and several other varieties can produce humans capable of having a subjective experience we refer to as beauty, or the love that would have us kiss our kids goodnight. Science is no closer to answering these questions than it was a century ago." End of quote. We can, as humans should, step back from the tools of science and attempt to grasp the magnificence. We possess the power to feel the breeze, to hear the cardinal, to stare into the fog, to smell the bacon, to taste the raspberries, and to experience the emotions that arise as these events impact our central nervous system. Some imagine that the understanding of natural processes has undermined the necessity for belief in God. The reason that so much has been brought to light that there is no longer a need for God's explanation of events. However, at the same time that innumerable little things have been discovered, the big picture has taken on immense complexity. The universe is no longer perceived as having the simplicity that once called Ernest Haeckel to write in 1899, quote, "With this single argument, the mystery of the universe is explained, the deity annulled, and the new era of infinite knowledge ushered in," end of quote. Knowledge is not on track to be infinite, to annul deity, or to explain the mystery of the universe. More than ever, we need an adequate explanation. The poet James Russell Lowell captured the essence of God's relationship to the created world with the words, quote, "Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own." Any question concerning whether or not God exists will not be resolved by the scientific method. Those tools and discoveries do not offer a scientific proof of the existence of God. They do make a significant addition to the apologetic argument for God's existence. So universally, believers accept God's use of process in days and seasons, in rain and sunshine, in plant growth, and bringing out the constellations. However, because of the influence of a few teachers, many refuse to accept that process could be involved in the acts of God, referred to in Genesis chapter 1. In that chapter, a, quote, literal, end of quote, interpretation is often demanded. The obvious figure, parallelism, in structure of that chapter is ignored. Whatever becomes evident through scientific discovery concerning the origin of the universe and the biosphere will not conflict with the great message of God to humanity in Genesis. All the information gleaned by scientists about the growth of living organisms does not violate the decree that God caused the growth. That is true of the other processes God has established in nature, including those revealed in Genesis. God set natural processes in motion, and the Bible rightfully attributes those activities to their maker, a human-invented hermeneutic that demands the elimination of process from Genesis 1 and conflicts with science is not somehow intrinsically demanded. To accept that interpretation does not somehow make us better believers and more faithful to God. It is just another human interpretation that tries to make God fit our limited understanding of what it means to be God. If we let God be God, he can use process to accomplish his purpose without it diminishing our faith. Science is a friend of creation, not an enemy, by Derek Anderson. A little editorial note here. The Does God Exist ministry gives $1,000 scholarships every year for post-secondary education. To win the scholarship, participants must enter a 5,000-word or less essay on the topic, Science is a Friend of Faith, Not an Enemy. Our winning essay for 2014 was submitted by Derek Anderson, and we present it to you now. The Bible very clearly identifies God as the creator of the heaven and the earth. On the other hand, for years, science has appeared to contradict this claim, and scientists have taught that the universe was eternal and did not need a creator. Carl Sagan, a noted scientist and atheist, expressed the sentiment of many skeptics when he said, quote, "If God wanted to send a message in ancient writings were the only way he could think of doing it, he could have done a better job," end of quote. Why doesn't the Bible give us more details or tell us exactly how and when God did this, along with the specific processes that he used to create all that we see? Unfortunately, for those craving scientific facts, the Bible's goal is not to teach science. or if it is the history book of the universe. It tells how the universe began and how it came to be the way that it is. It was written by inspiration of God. The Lord knows how the universe works. He made it. Unlike science textbooks, the Bible never changes nor has to be revised. God got it right the first time concerning every topic it covers. The Genesis account of creation is brief and unsatisfying from a scientific point of view. However, communicating these facts was not God's real reason for giving us the book of Genesis. The greatest need of the human heart is not to know just when or how the universe was created, but who created it. God's purpose was to reveal who he is and to magnify himself as sole creator. Nevertheless, believers do not have to suspend reason to follow Christ. There is plenty of biblical support for science and vice versa. For years, well-meaning Christians have believed and taught that the Bible must be the only source of truth for all things, religious and secular. This has led many to believe that science is of the devil, or any attempt to gain knowledge from other sources is sinful. However, this position runs contrary to Scripture itself. Psalms 19:1-4 tells us that God also speaks through his creation. Science is basically the study of all that God has made, and Scriptures declare that the physical world reveals the great power of an invisible God, Romans 1:19-20. This precept alone should comfort the faithful with the knowledge that science can only observe and comment on what God has already done. A Christian does not have to turn his back on scientific findings or discoveries in order to be true to his faith. He only has to conscientiously think through the issues that science presents. He will then discover that the consensus of the modern scientific community is that the universe had a beginning, a creation event, as they say. This is in agreement with the ancient writings of the Bible stating that the universe is not eternal, but was created by a transcendent, omnipotent God. The same conclusion that men of faith have arrived at through the Word of God, men of science have now found inescapable through several lines of overwhelming scientific evidence. The laws of thermodynamics, Einstein's general theory of relativity, and observations of astronomy. It is important to point out that while there is no conflict between science and the Bible, there is a conflict between science and some traditional beliefs among many Christians. According to practically all of the sciences, geography, physics, astronomy, etc., the universe appears to be very old. However, many Christians have come to believe that recent creation tradition, which forces them to reject any scientific findings contrary to the belief that the earth was created within the last 10,000 years. Some may argue that this belief is not a tradition, but is based upon a clear teaching of the Bible. However, history reveals that recent creation tradition stems from the teachings and methods of James Usher, from 1581 to 1656, Irish Archbishop of Armagh. He used the genealogies found in Genesis and other portions of the Bible to conclude that there were 4,036 years from the creation of the universe until the birth of Christ. Another scholar, John Lightfoot, 1602 to 1675, further refined Usher's calculations and figured that Genesis 1:1 occurred on October the 18th, 4004 B.C., and Adam was created on October the 23rd at 9 o'clock a.m. This date for creation became a part of Protestant tradition, even showing up in early printings of the Authorized King James translation of the Bible as a marginal note and heading. Neither Usher nor Lightfoot recognized that in the Old Testament, the Hebrew words for father and son can also mean forefather or descendant. Nonetheless, these dates have become ingrained into much Christian thinking. This is in spite of the fact that fossil evidence, radioactive dating of rocks, and the ability to see light from galaxies light years away renders this view unreasonable. Proponents of the young Earth school of thought have tried to get out of this dilemma by proposing that God created everything with the appearance of age, even though the Bible and geology testify to progressive creation. Both tell us that the earth was once formless and empty, and that this condition was followed by a primitive universal ocean, which in turn was followed by the appearance of dry land. Traditional beliefs may have been contrary to modern scientific understanding, but the Bible is not. This is an important point to keep in mind when viewing the vast times and distances that are used to describe the universe. How great our God is to do all that we see. We can only begin to understand the means he used to do it. The laws of thermodynamics are a beginning to seem that science is only a description of God's handiwork and not an alternative view of creation. The first, called The Law of Conservation of Mass and Energy, states that matter and energy can neither be created nor destroyed. According to this description of what holds true in our present physical universe, matter and energy may be converted to the other, but neither can appear from nothing. This law seems to be in conflict with the Bible, because there is no denying that the universe is here, and the Bible claims that nothing existed before God created everything. However, if a believer looks closely at the laws of conservation of mass and energy, he will discover that instead of contradicting the Word of God, it gets support from the inspired statements of Scripture. First, no one denies that the creation of the universe was a miraculous event. When God created the universe, he created a new thing. So, of course, new laws would apply. The law of conservation of mass and energy describes what we see operating today, and it is true that matter does not spring from nothing today. Therefore, to say that no new matter is being created spontaneously today is to agree with the Bible in Genesis 2:1, where it says that the heavens and the earth were finished, and that God rested from his work of creation. The second law of thermodynamics tells us that our universe is wearing down, and matter is and will continue to become more and more dispersed, less and less structured. This scientific law or precept is simply an observation of what we see happening all around us. Our treasured possessions are rusting and turning to dirt. Our bodies are wearing down, and the sun and stars are burning up tons of hydrogen fuel every second, and the Earth's magnetic field is decaying. Everywhere you look, the universe is dissipating. Therefore, we know the universe cannot be eternal. Otherwise, it would have been run down a long time ago. The stars would have burned out, and all matter would have decayed to a few elements. This law clearly points to a beginning, a highly structured and ordered beginning at that. As human beings, we are like a person who walks into a room right after someone spins a top and walks out another door. We are able to observe the top spinning, but not who set it in motion in the first place. After carefully observing the top, we may note the skill of the other in spinning the top, but we can also see the effects that other forces have on the top, causing it to slow and to wobble. Our universe is slowing down and beginning to wobble. The second law of thermodynamics describes and predicts this phenomenon. Inspired writers of the Bible have been in full agreement with this law for over 2 millennia. Communicating the clear message that our universe is wearing out, and, quote, "The heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you will remain. They will all wear out like a garment," end of quote, Psalms 102, 25, 26, and Isaiah 34, 4, and 51, 6. Another area in which the scientific community is a friend of faith in the Bible involves Einstein's general theory of relativity. Few people possess the high-level intelligence required to thoroughly understand Einstein's theory. But for the layman, two main points are important. First, the equations of general relativity imply that the universe cannot be static, but must be expanding or contracting. Secondly, every verifiable prediction that it makes has been proven correct. In the General Theory of Relativity, published in 1915, Einstein reasoned that gravity could not be an attractive force like Isaac Newton and other scientists had thought. He explained the force of gravity as a consequence of the effect of mass on space-time. The gravitational force of great masses, like the sun, can be pictured not as a force of attraction tugging on other objects, but as a great mass curving the space around it, forcing each planet to follow the path that is as straight as it can go in curved space. His initial predictions held that if there were enough mass in the universe, and if it was not too dispersed, the mass would cause all of the space to curve in on itself until the universe becomes closed. The other possibility is that if the density of the universe is lower than the critical amount, then all the bodies of the universe should fly apart from one another. The universe should be expanding and decelerating with time. Einstein tried to get away from this idea because it implied a beginning, but he was forced to concede to this inescapable conclusion after other scientists began to review his findings. He became convinced of the necessity of a beginning, a creation event. Astronomer Edwin Hubble, in 1889 to 1953, later confirmed the expansion of the universe through telescopic observation. After Einstein wrote about his desire to know how God created this world, "I am not interested in this or that phenomena, in the spectrum of this or that element. I want to know his thought. The rest are details," end of quote from Einstein. Since the early 1960s, the effects of general relativity have been confirmed in test after test, as it has become possible to precisely measure the expansion of the universe. Science has been upholding the claims of the Bible writers for decades in several passages. The Bible points out that the universe has been stretched out or expanded. Isaiah 40 and verse 22 says, quote, "He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent," end of quote. Psalms 104 and verse 2 echoes the same idea. The Lord wraps himself in light as with a garment. He stretches out the heavens like a tent, end of quote. Job 9 and 8 says, "He alone stretches out the heavens." These verses suggest that the universe has increased in size since its creation. God is causing it to expand like points on a balloon that is being inflated. It is amazing to see that scientific discoveries only confirm the biblical record God has given us. The observations of astronomy also provide a bridge between the findings of science and biblical faith. 20th century astronomers have recorded significant observations that offer proof for any objective person that the universe had a beginning, just as the book of Genesis has detailed for over 3 millennia. As mentioned earlier in this essay, the one man who has contributed to this area of scientific support of the scriptures is Edwin Hubble. After a decade of boxing, dueling, and World War I combat, this Rhodes Scholar devoted the rest of his life to astronomy. He spent most of the 1920s patiently peering into the 100-inch reflector telescope at California's Mount Wilson Observatory. It was there that he made the discovery that the nebulae outside of our galaxy are not nearby gas clouds, but are themselves galaxies of stars like our own Milky Way, but at great distances away. After careful observation, he also began to calculate the distances of these star systems using a method of calculation called trigonometric parallax. In 1929, Hubble made the discovery that the galaxies are retreating from each other and that there was a precise linear relationship between the distance and velocity of the galaxies. This discovery, now known as Hubble's Law, tells us that all distant galaxies are retreating from us with a velocity that is directly proportional to their distance from us. Robert Jastrow, a self-proclaimed agnostic, stated, quote, "The Hubble Law is one of the great discoveries in science. It is one of the main supports of the scientific story of Genesis," end of quote. The Bible also says that each star is unique, which is consistent with the observations of astronomy. 1 Corinthians 15:41 says, quote, "There is one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars. For one star differs from another star in its glory," end of quote. This is an amazing declaration, considering the fact that people living at the time the Apostle Paul wrote this verse would have had to rely upon the naked eye to view the heavens. All stars look alike to the naked eye. However, modern scientific analysis reveals that each star is different and unique. Even though there are millions of known stars in the universe, each one is different. No two stars have the exact same properties. There are many variables in a star's makeup, including the total number of atoms, chemical composition, size, temperature, color, and brightness. Sometimes spectrographic study is required to detect the differences. Nevertheless, science reveals that the Word of God is true. In conclusion, though science and the Bible have sometimes appeared to be enemies, this is far from the truth. When the claims of science are subjectively examined, one will discover that the two are actually friends, not enemies. The laws of thermodynamics, Einstein's general theory of relativity, and the observation of astronomy offer 3 examples of this friendship. Scientist and God. Our scientist for this particular issue is John Eccles, who in 1963 received a Nobel Prize in Medicine and Physiology. He's considered to be one of the greatest neurophysiologists of the 20th century. Dr. Eccles had this to say, and I quote him, "I believe there is a divine providence operating over and above the materialist happenings of biological evolution. If I consider reality as I experience it, the primary experience I have is one of my own existence as a unique, self-conscious being, which I believe is God created. Since materialist solutions fail to account for our experienced uniqueness, I am constrained to attribute the uniqueness of the self or soul to the supernatural spiritual creation. This conclusion is of estimable theological significance. It strongly reinforces our belief in the human soul and its miraculous origin in a divine creation. I believe in the reality of the world of mind or spirit as well as in the reality of the material world. Furthermore, I am a finalist in the sense of believing that there is some design that has eventually led to us, self-conscious beings, with our unique individuality. And we are able to contemplate and we can attempt to understand the grandeur and wonder of nature. We can regard the death of the body and brain as dissolution of our dualist existence. Hopefully, the liberated soul will find another future of even deeper meaning and more entrancing experiences, perhaps in some renowned embodied existence in accord with traditional Christian teaching. Cynthia's Corner, fearfully and wonderfully made by Cynthia Clayton. My oldest son just had a baby boy. What a blessing and a joy to have a grandbaby. Psalms 139, verses 13 and 14 says, quote, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made." We are fearfully and wonderfully made. From the moment of conception until birth, the human body undergoes rapid transformation and growth. From the time of birth for the first few years of life, a human child is a sensory sponge, soaking up all the stimuli around it, processing it all, and learning and growing at an incredible rate. The workings of the human brain are so complex that we are still discovering how the body and mind work together. But aside from the physical complexities of the human body, human beings are uniquely made in God's image, in His likeness, Genesis 1:26. We are spiritual beings with an eternal soul, Matthew 16:26. God is spirit, John 4:24, and love, 1 John 4:7 and 9. And we have been created with spiritual elements which reflect our Creator, the ability to love, the need to be loved, the human emotions of empathy, sympathy, and compassion. We also have within us the creative yearnings that are seen in the love of music, dance, art, and other creative expressions. The ability to appreciate the beauty, diversity, and wonder of everything that surrounds us is something we don't see being expressed by any other form of life on the planet. The uniqueness of humans is shown in the complexity of our mind and body. Even more, it is clearly seen in the soul within us, which reflects our being created in the image of God. Dandy Designs, keeping cool. Most of us know that feathers are good insulators. As a kid, you might have had a feather down coat or blanket, or your grandmother may have had a comforter quilt that would keep you incredibly warm on a cold winter night. That was especially important in homes heated with wood or coal where the fire would go out around midnight and the house would get very cold. The same insulating ability of feathers that keep birds warm in the winter can be a liability in the summer. When the temperature hits 110 degrees, how do birds keep cool? In some cases, like crows or blackbirds, the color of the bird also causes heat issues. The black feathers absorb a high percentage of the sun's rays, and getting overheated can be fatal. Like a lot of things we see in nature, the cooling features designed into birds are complex and involve several options. Birds do not sweat, but they have bare skin on their legs and faces, which radiates heat. Birds increase their respiration rate in heat, producing the panting most of us have seen birds do. This action releases large amounts of heat and is similar to what we see in dogs. Most species of birds have a blood control device that increases the blood flow to their beaks in hot weather, causing rapid heat loss. In addition to these physical design features, there are behavioral ways that birds keep cool. Wing flutters and the lifting of feathers increase air circulation, pulling heat from the bird's body. Some birds use evaporative cooling by bathing or urinating on their legs. Some birds soar where the air is cooler. Most birds feed in the cooler parts of the day and seek shade and rest during the hottest times of the day. The sound of moving water attracts many species of birds, and they will fly through a mister or a waterfall or rub against wet foliage. The Bible tells us we can know there is a God through the things He has made, Romans 1, 18-20. Observing how the design of God's creatures allows survival in the hottest and coldest of times is one evidence of design. The data for that article came from National Wildlife, August-September 2014, page 12. The lowly catfish. How many times is the word catfish included in country songs? For you non-country listeners, the answer is a large number of times. We tend to take this fish that is so familiar to us for granted in spite of the fact that we see restaurants that advertise it as their specialty. Anyone who has done much fishing has caught a catfish by accident, if nothing else. There are even catfish that are sold for use in household aquariums because they keep the aquariums clean. In the past year, there have been some detailed studies made of the catfish and what they eat and how they find it. Catfish are found in all kinds of lakes, ponds, and rivers. Frequently, the water in which they live is so muddy they cannot use sight at all in locating food. And catfish feed at night, so no vision is required for their securing food. While they will eat anything, catfish depend upon organisms found at the bottom of lakes and rivers for their food. This includes worms, crayfish, and small bottom-feeding fish. In Science Magazine, June 6, 2014, there is a detailed research report titled, quote, "Marine Telost Locates Live Prey Through pH Sensing," end of quote. The new word used to describe this ability is chemoreception. Electrophysiological readings from the barbel or whisker of the catfish have shown that their barbers respond to small changes in pH. The barbels are so sensitive that the signals are received when the pH varies by as little as 0.1 on the pH scale. This sensitivity is enough to detect worms or other benthic forms of life, that is, creatures that live in the lowest level of water. As these creatures breathe, they cause small changes in the pH of the water around them. In experiments conducted on sea catfish, areas of an aquarium where worms had been present but were removed attracted all the catfish in the aquarium. When a tube was inserted with water in it that had a slightly different pH than the water in the aquarium, the catfish bit at the tube. Catfish are an important part of the ecology of any body of water. Their ability to live and find food, even in foul water but in very muddy conditions, shows the design that has been built into their creation. God's wisdom and planning can be seen everywhere around us. Even in the lowly catfish, we can see the hand of God molding and shaping life to exist in abundance on this planet. News and notes. Atheist Initiate TV channel. There is now a TV channel that features programming created by and for atheists. It is Atheist TV and is available on the Roku, R-O-K-U, streaming network as well as the American Atheist website. Its goal is, quote, to give a yet unavailable broadcast voice to an already strong but growing atheist community. The slogan is Atheism Everywhere. As more and more atheist arguments are given to the public, it will become increasingly important for us to, quote, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you of the reason for the hope that you have. 1 Peter 3:15. Atheists excluded from public office. Did you know that there are 7 states that have constitutions that do not allow an atheist to hold public office? Obviously, such laws are ignored and will eventually be changed. However, they show that the original writers of those state constitutions did not think that someone who does not believe in God could be moral or self-sacrificing and thus would be unfit for public office. Obviously, there have been some politicians who were very religious and very dishonest at the same time, and all an atheist has to do is lie to get elected if the laws remain. By the way, the states where this is still in the state constitution are Maryland, Arkansas, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas. Data for this came from the Austin American Statesman, December 14, 2014, page A15, but it was originally in the New York Times. Genetic analysis supports bird tree of evolution. Genetics is a useful tool in a variety of modern studies. We are making great strides in understanding the medical problems humans face that have a genetic origin. We are also finding that genetics aids in our understanding of the history of the Earth. However, like the medical applications, the study is so complex it will certainly be revised and expanded in the future. In our discussions of evolution, we have pointed out that the Bible indicates multiple starts for various groupings of life on the earth. 1 Corinthians 15:39 states that there are 4 kinds of flesh, fish, men, mammals, and birds, and that grouping is consistently in Genesis 1 and in the flood account. Recent genetic studies have supported the bird family tree, with 48 bird species related to one another through their DNA. The complexity of this is seen in the fact that there are more than 10,000 species of birds, and only 48 have been cataloged. And that took 200 scientists 7 years to complete. The more we know of the creation, the more evidence we see of God's wisdom and design in his creation and the integrity of the biblical record. That data came from Science News, January 10, 2015, page 6. More or fewer tornadoes? Doomsayers on all sides try to convince us that earthquakes and horrendous storms are happening with increasing frequency as we approach the destruction of the earth. The fact is that all these things are cyclic in nature, and we are now in a low-frequency part of the cycle. In February issue of National Geographic, page 15, there is a report from the NOAA Prediction Center showing that the number of tornadoes in the United States each year has dropped from 526 in 1954 to 485 in 2013. The number of tornado days has dropped from 157 to 100. Why so many planets? As scientists study planets orbiting other stars, new understandings are coming forward. One of those is the question of how the shape of planetary orbits and how that impacts life's existence. Many extrasolar planets have very eccentric orbits, meaning they swing very close to their parent star and then swing very far away. For life to exist, there has to be a steady distance to the parent star to avoid climatic extremes that would extinguish life. Earth's orbit has an eccentricity of 1.7%, which is very close to a perfect circle. Pluto has the most eccentric orbit in our solar system, being 25%. Some extrasolar planets have been observed with orbits of 80% eccentricity. A study reported in Scientific American, March 2015, page 18 and 19, correlates the number of planets in a planetary system with the shape of the orbits of the planets. The gravitational interaction helps keep the orbit circular, which gives the stability necessary to allow life to exist. This is one more variable in the long list of things that have to be right to allow life to exist. What causes hunger? God has given us the capacity to produce more than enough food for every man, woman, and child on this planet. Why is it then that 805 million people don't have enough to eat? The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations identifies the causes as 1. Civil war, 2. Poor infrastructure, 3. Restrictive leaders, 4. Natural disasters and erratic weather, and 5. Economic swings. An interesting website on this subject is Cargill.com/foodsecureworld. Some amazing work is being done by Christian organizations to address hunger. We have the tools, but selfishness, greed, and control issues prevent real answers from getting to all people. How are we using God's money? The 2015 federal discretionary budget request sent to Congress in March of 2014 shows interesting numbers. 2% of the budget went for food and agriculture, 2% for transportation, 2% for science, 3% for energy and environment, 3% for international affairs, 5% for labor, 5% for health, 5% for housing, 6% for government, 6% for veterans benefits, and 6% for education. If you add that up, you get about 45%. The rest of the budget, all 55% of our money, goes to the Department of Defense. That's 653-100-000-000. That's 653 trillion, 110 billion, or $1.2 million per minute. How much suffering on earth could be eliminated with 1 minute's worth of our national defense? Skeptics blame God for the horror and the pain we see all around us, but God has provided the resources for us. If all mankind would just follow the teachings of Jesus in Matthew chapters 5 through 7. Islamic leaders call for reform. My Muslim friends here in Michigan are as appalled as the rest of us at the massive violence and massive killing being carried on in the name of Muhammad. Recently, the president of Egypt, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, made a call for Islam to reform the faith that has made the Muslim world a source of destruction and pitted it against the rest of the world, end of quote. One would have to hope that this is the beginning of a change in how the Muslim world treats those with whom they differ. The problem that our Muslim friends face is the clear statements in the Quran to kill and destroy those who are not Muslims. New surprises in the Van Allen belts. Earth's magnetic field protects us from charged particles coming from the sun and other radiation sources in space. Gravity pulls the particle in, but the magnetic field pushes them out, and they end up in belts starting about 600 miles above the Earth and stretch out as far as 25,000 miles. Astronomers announced in November of 2014 that they have found another barrier some 7,200 miles above the Earth, forming an impenetrable barrier to high-energy electrons coming from the Sun that are not stopped by the other belts because of their energy. Dr. Daniel Baker, who did much of the work, says the barrier is a force field somewhat like the force fields on Star Trek. But what is causing this phenomenon is not known. It just adds one more factor to the long list of carefully designed features that allow us to be able to live on Earth. That data is from Astronomy Magazine, April 2015, page 18. Oklahoma quakes, man-caused? In 2014, there were nearly 300 times as many earthquakes in Oklahoma as in 2008, and more than the previous 30 years combined. In 2014, there were 584 quakes of magnitude 3.0 or greater. Before 2008, there were fewer than 5 a year. The cause seems to be injection wells that bury wastewater from fracking and other oil and gas operations. Years ago, sewage disposal in Colorado was linked to earthquakes, so this wouldn't be a first. As time goes by, we see more and more evidence that what God created was good and safe, but man's mismanagement has caused tragedy, and then skeptics attack God's poor design. The data is from the United States Geological Service, Oklahoma Geological Survey. Our chemical food supply. Since 1950, farmers have fed antibiotic growth promoters to livestock. 80% of all antibiotics sold in the United States are given to poultry and other livestock, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In 1960, it took 63 days to grow a 3.4-pound broiler chicken, and in 2011, it took 47 days to grow a 5.4-pound one. The problem is that this heavy use can produce superbugs that are resistant to drugs. And the government says the cost of all this to the U.S. Health Service in 2013 was in excess of $21 billion. Like many things that threaten us, greed and mismanagement of what God has given us brings pain and heartbreak to many people. God told man, take care of the garden, dress it and keep it, in Genesis 2:15. Like the earthquake issue in Oklahoma, we need to look at what we are doing and learn from the mistakes of the past. Cage-fighting Christians. We have all heard of church league basketball and softball leagues, but now we have teams of church groups engaged in cage fighting. This is a copy of the UFC cage fights in which kicking and punching goes on until one fighter gives up in submission. Fights are posted on the organization's website and fighters are shown in action. Biblical Archaeology Magazine in their May-June 2015 issue, page 26, suggests the scene as pornographic. It looks like rape, end of quote. We would suggest the world's values and attitudes have been used to get attention, and that such activity flies in the face of the teachings of Jesus Christ. The Gospel of Jesus' wife. In September 2012, Dr. Karen King, who is a professor at Harvard Divinity School, presented a discovery of a document which she called the Gospel of Jesus' wife. There has been considerable debate about whether her claims were justified and whether Jesus was, in fact, married. A Coptic scholar named Christian Ashland has been studying Gnostic literature and particularly the Gnostic Gospel of John. Ashland has shown that the Gnostic Gospel of John was a forgery and the Jesus' wife fragment was by the same forgerer. There is no doubt in most scholars' minds that the claim that Jesus had a wife based on King's find is not supported by the evidence. That data came from Biblical Archaeology Review, May-June 2015, pages 54 to 59. Prayer for the sick lands Christians in jail. The Laotian provincial court put 5 Christians in jail who prayed for a woman who later died. The woman asked for prayer from local Christian leaders after unsuccessful treatments from healers and doctors. After the Christians prayed for the woman, she died, and the Christians were arrested. The continued persecution of Christians all over the world is glossed over by the media, but continues to be an issue. That data was from Christianity Today, April 2015, page 17. Fire chief fired for Bible beliefs. Kevin Cochran has been a fireman for 30 years and was also the fire chief in Atlanta. Cochran is also a strong believer in Christ and the moral principles taught by Jesus. He wrote a book about how good biblical moral standards are and has been fired for giving copies of the book to co-workers. Advocates for Cochran have raised the questions. What would be more intolerant and exclusionary than ending a public servant's 30 years of distinguished service for his religious beliefs, end of quote. Source for that is the New York Times, January 12, 2015. And that brings us to the end of the July-August issue. We'll be back with the September-October issue in 2 months. And in the meantime, we hope God blesses you in many ways. This is John Clayton, wishing you the best.